Welcome to Learn Something New Every Day. I am Joan Boyko, Coordinator of Communications and Community Outreach for the Palm Springs Unified School District. We are here each Sunday at 6:30 a.m. on 99.1 FM KGX and 9 a.m. on 92.3 FM KWXY. We also invite you to download and subscribe to our podcast. It is really easy. All you have to do is go to iTunes, look for Learn Something New, press subscribe. You'll get a new show each week. And this show, of course, would not be possible without the stellar talents of my interns here in the Digital Arts Technology Academy, also known as DATA, at Cathedral City High School, under the direction of Mr. Bryce Johnson. Marlene's on the board today. Thank you, thank you. You can say hi.
Hi.
Oh, I didn't throw you off this time. You had your mic ready and everything. Awesome. Thank you for everything that you do. Greatly appreciate it. And today on the show, I am very pleased to welcome Mr. Mike Walbridge, and he is the district's Executive Director of Student Learning. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So this is your second or third year?
Starting my third year in Palm
Springs.
Time
flies, man. I can't believe I haven't had you on the show yet.
2+ years, and I'm in my 34th year as an educator.
Yeah, and tell us, where did you come here from, and give us a little bit on your background.
So I've got kind of a unique career in that I've been a teacher at the elementary and secondary level. Started in LA Unified as an elementary teacher, and then I was a middle school history and teacher of English learners in Rialto for a while, and then up in the Bay Area in a couple of different districts, and then I eventually became an elementary principal up in San Leandro in the Bay Area. And from there, I moved into the district office where I was a director of curriculum and instruction for about 5 years in San Leandro, and then an assistant superintendent for ed services in a small district called Dixon Unified up by Davis, Sacramento area. And then I moved down here 2.5 years ago and was able to find this position and reconnect with a colleague that I had worked with when I was in Rialto, Mike Sweezy. We had been...
I didn't know you guys knew each other.
Yeah, in this would be the 90s. Mike and I were both in similar positions, working with English learners, coordinating programs, and we were both doing the training for other trainers in different districts across San Bernardino and Riverside County to help teachers work with English learners. It was called CLAD at the time, Cross-Cultural Language Acquisition and Development. And so I was training the trainers on some of the modules, and Mike was training on the other modules. So we did that for a couple years together, and then lo and behold, when I was looking at the districts down here in Coachella Valley as we were planning on moving here, I noticed Mike was the assistant superintendent here in Palm Springs Unified. So I was fortunate enough to be able to make the move and get the position that I'm in right now.
Awesome. So you were planning on moving here anyway?
Yeah, I was basically, it's a long story, but my wife needed to be in the warm climate. So even though everyone else thinks here is horribly hot, it's a perfect climate for her. And my mom has lived here in the desert. She's been here for about 30 years. We would come down all the time on vacations and holidays. So I knew what I was getting into into the 115 degree summers.
Well, that's good. So you're happy with the move?
Yeah.
Are you a native Californian?
Yeah, I grew up in New York till I was 11.
Oh, I see.
Around, yeah. So I was in New York and then...
What part?
I was born in the Bronx, New Rochelle.
Me too.
And lived, that's right. I knew you had, you've kept your accent a lot longer than I have. Your New York accent.
Do you think so?
Yeah, you sound like a New Yorker.
Yeah, well, Mike, you moved here at 11.
Right.
I did spend half of my life in New
that's
York,
right.
so
you've kept
I have it. A little bit of time on you. But I've been here for 30 years. I thought the accent had dissipated.
I can tell because it's like my mom's accent because she lived for a lot longer in
But I was born in Bronx Lebanon Hospital.
All right, there you go. Real close.
We lived in Queens and then Long Island.
Yeah, we lived in Long Island, Westbury, Long Island, which you probably know. And
Then
briefly in Connecticut, and then
me too.
My dad was transferred to L.A. Oh, see, you have the same life.
Yeah, I worked at the Bridgeport Post.
Okay.
In my Pittsburgh, journalism career, yes.
Yeah, we were
I covered Trumbull and lived in Shelton and
so this
Milford.
Was after, a long time after I left, I think. No, because I was
it
gone
was,
in 1971.
Yeah, it was in the, it was in the late 80s.
Yeah, I was in Stamford, Connecticut. And then my dad got transferred to L.A. and so I graduated from Taft High School in Woodland Hills in the San Fernando Valley.
All right. I didn't plan on spending that much time on the places you've been, but we kind of crossed the same paths just a few years apart. So very cool. Well, we're very happy to have you here. And interestingly, I've been in the district for 19 years, and this position is one that you're the first person to have. It was established by our superintendent after shortly after she got here. She's been going on her fourth year. And so after she had been here about a year, she established this position. And so give us a, if you can, because I know that it's only a half hour show. So I know you can't cover everything that you do, but give us a description of what does the executive director of student learning do?
Yeah, because it's both the key to what we do as schools, student learning is what it's all about, but it's also something, a term that wasn't used more until recently, used to be called curriculum and instruction. And then basically I'm doing curriculum, which is the textbooks and materials that students are using. And then the instruction is the way teachers are using it, how they're teaching the classes and the training that's related to both of those. But in the past we just said CNI or curriculum and instruction, but now the term student learning refers to what we're really trying to do is to have those things come together and get better student outcomes.
So we do have, we have directors of curriculum and instruction for both elementary and for secondary. So do you work, do they work under you or do they report to you?
Yes. So I describe my position as I'm in charge of all the curriculum instruction programs from pre-K to college transition. And so that includes the director of early childhood education, Myra Costa, the director of elementary ed, Dr. Simone Kovats, secondary ed, Duncan McCulloch, and then also the CTE, the college transition, college technical education programs under Dr. Deanna
Killian.
I always get her name.
Coolian. It's actually Coolian.
Coolian.
Yeah,
Coolian.
She was just on the show a couple weeks ago. So.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. So you heard all about those.
So
programs.
It's not easy to pronounce. It's even harder to spell.
Exactly.
But it's actually Coolian. It's just coming
Coolian.
Back to me now.
Coolian.
It's Coolian.
Coolian. That sounds right. I just
yes.
call her D.
I know, right.
Easier.
We all know her as D. She's awesome. Yeah. So that's a big job.
Yeah. So I get to. And the way I describe it is that in other districts that are smaller than Palm Springs, there might be one or two people doing all those things. And so I have done all those things in other districts that were much smaller. So what's great about this position is I work right under the Assistant Superintendent of Ed Services, Dr. Sweezy, and I get to do more of the kind of hands-on day-to-day work with the people in those positions. And then he works with them closely on the bigger issues. So it's a good fit, and it keeps me busy all the time with, and there's also a lot of projects that happen at this level where they span the grade levels. And so I've got involved in a number of things that are multi-grade projects, like the one we're involved in tomorrow, where the-
that we did a few months ago.
Yes. Oh, pardon me. I forgot
talk about that. This the our new Native American curriculum, which is really exciting.
Right.
But finish your thought.
Yeah. So I'm coordinating all those different positions, and anytime we're doing a textbook adoption, I'm working with whoever is overseeing that on the at that grade span, and we're doing teacher trainings. We'll try to put everything together so that there's some kind of consistency across the grade levels in what we're doing.
So what are some of the, or I think there's two or three going on where you're exploring new curriculum that the district to adopt, and what areas are those in?
So right now, so in the last couple of years, we've been able to put an elementary and English language arts curriculum out there and done trainings around that. And then just this past year, we've implemented a science curriculum at the secondary level, at the middle school level, and a new history curriculum at middle and high school. But the one that you may have been hearing a lot about, because there's a lot of parent involvement in the issue, is the implementing what's called the California Youth Act, Healthy Youth Act, right. And it's a health curriculum that's commonly called sex eds for sexual health education. And so districts across California have been struggling to implement the new law that came about a couple of years ago and to do it in a way that's really both addressing students' needs for health and good information on those topics, and also to recognize that it's a topic that parents have a lot to say about and that we need to give that, hear their voice and make sure that they're involved in the process of adopting new materials.
So, okay, well I was going to start with Native American, but that's okay. Let's start with this one. So last spring, we launched the secondary curriculum, is that right?
That's right.
And so we had a parent information meeting. Parents, some who were there were supportive, some who were there were very upset about it. And then as the board was had their board meeting where they were gonna approve the curriculum, some parents came and voiced their concerns at that time. And then after that, after you adopt the curriculum, then it's available, right, for parents to be able to see exactly what their kids are doing.
Yeah, the secondary curriculum is at the 7th and 9th grade level, mm-hmm. and it's taught through the science courses at each school, so a parent could go into the school and ask to see the curriculum, and there's binders with the... It's not a student book, a textbook, but it's a teacher binder, and a parent can go and review that curriculum.
Is anything online?
We can't put it online because it's copyright and licensed, but they could also come into the district office and ask for someone in my department and come in and review the curriculum there in the district office.
And prior to the students receiving the lessons, and how many lessons are there?
The 7th and 9th grade each have 10 lessons.
And are they in a row? So is it 10 consecutive lessons?
Yeah, the way
10 days?
It's going to happen over the next few months in the middle schools and then more in the late spring in the high schools. And we're asking schools to organize it over 10 days, 10 periods of science instruction. And the way it would work is parents would be notified at least 2 weeks in advance by both a flyer and an auto dialer, phone calls that go home. Yeah. And there would be an opportunity to go to a parent preview night or to just come in and see the curriculum. And then we're encouraging parents to consider whether they think this is the right fit for their student, for their child. And if it isn't, they have the right to just write a note to the teacher, and their student will then be in another room working on a different health curriculum or science-related curriculum during that time. And that's called opting out of the curriculum.
And do you have to opt out of all of it, or are there certain components you can opt out of? And I know there's certain components you can't opt out of as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky, and we're trying to make sure we're following state laws and guidance from lawyers, but basically, there's so many things woven into the curriculum that if a parent wanted to opt out of just certain parts of it, that would be hard to do because each lesson starts with the teacher taking questions out of an anonymous question box that's central to the lessons, and so anything can come up at any time. So we encourage parents that if they have major concerns about the lesson and the lessons, that they opt out of a whole thing. But if they are interested in opting out of a part of it, then we would have that discussion with them. And I want to say that one of the things that we tell parents is that you can opt out of the lessons and be in another room, but there's no guarantee that your students aren't going to hear the information.
Sure.
They can, of course, Google any of the terms that might come up in class online, and they may or may not stumble across the right website with the right, the latest medically accurate, age-appropriate information, or the student might go out during lunch and be talking about what they heard in class. So there's really no way in a California public school to escape this, or in the world sure. we live in with the internet so accessible. But we do want to always make sure that parents know that while we want to make this available for all those who do want their child to hear this information in a very well-structured way by a teacher, they have the right to opt out of it if they choose.
And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Learn Something New Every Day on KGX and KWXY, and my guest is our Executive Director of Student Learning, Mike Walbridge. And we're talking about right now the sexual health curriculum. So we just went over secondary. And then we recently,
the secondary was adopted last spring. The elementary is going to the board tentatively December 10th. So we had a committee.
Oh, Tuesday. Okay.
Oh, yes. So we had a committee in the fall that reviewed different curriculum options that are out there that complied with the law and taught in a way that we thought would work well with our students. And that curriculum is being recommended to the board. If the board approves it on December 10th, yes, a couple days from now, then tentatively scheduled for that date, then we would begin with teacher trainings and a rollout of that in the spring. But no student will be, and that's for fifth grade, no student in fifth grade would be getting the curriculum before April at the earliest. And again, there would be an opportunity for parents to hear about the curriculum, see it themselves, and make a decision if they felt like they wanted their student to be in the room for that.
So, and again, you handled a crowd of 60 or so parents a couple months ago,
right,
to unveil the curriculum, give them a little overview. And just not the actual, nuts and bolts yet, because it's not approved as of yet.
Right.
However, you dealt with the issues that came up at that meeting, and we were at the superintendent's parent advisory meeting earlier this month, or actually last month. And that was a big topic of discussion at that meeting.
Yes, I heard that, yes.
One of the parents, though, in that group was also on the committee. And she kind of pointed out the other side of what some of the issues were. And, the fact that having a teacher deliver it sends a different message than having the nurse do it, because that's one of the, parents like, the nurse used to do this. And, right. Now you're going to have a teacher doing it. Well, if you have a nurse presenting or a doctor presenting, makes it seem like there's some kind of medical issue going on here. And all it is another fact that you're educating your kid on. And that's the body, the human body, and what happens to it.
Yeah, the fifth grade curriculum is that we're proposing to the board is called Puberty Talk. And really, it's just about how their body will be changing in fifth grade or shortly after that, and making them aware of all the different things that happen that are common to boys and girls, and things that are happening to their body separately.
It's just, of course, as you already said very well, and I'll reiterate, parents have the right to opt their children out of any of the curriculum that they feel they would do a better job, or they're going to do a more adequate job giving to their kids, but I hope they do.
That is their
right.
And
that's the problem.
That is their right. They can do that anytime. And as I think that parent said at the meeting, what I heard is that she wants to have her child see the curriculum and wants to make sure that other students have the right to receive the curriculum, and respecting that others may not want
that
and may make a different choice for their child as they are. They're of course able to do.
And if you have that kind of relationship with your child, that you're going to actually have a frank discussion and explain things properly, and you don't need any assistance,
if you think
then go
you
ahead
can
and
do
opt
it,
out.
All the power to you.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. I don't want to get too wrapped up on this topic, because we have other things to talk about, and one of them is extremely exciting, and we alluded to it a little bit earlier, and that is the Native American curriculum that we have implemented at the third grade and expanding in the spring to 8th and 11th grade.
That's right.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I tell people that in my career, this is the most exciting thing I've been a part of. It's most rewarding, and it really has been tremendously satisfying to work alongside members of the Tribal Council of the Arcaliente Band of Cahuilla Indians here in Coachella Valley. And to every step of the way, work together where we bring to the table teachers that are writing the curriculum, especially a teacher on special assignment named Russell Eves, who manages all of our social science programs. But to have the teachers give the input into what a lesson plan can look like and how to teach that lesson, but to be drawing from what the tribal council and members of the tribe feel are the most important topics to them that reflect their culture, their history, and their traditions. And so the curriculum that we've written for third grade that's live and in the classrooms right now is reflective of that process of the last year and a half. And then, as you mentioned, we're right in the middle of finalizing and rolling out the 8th grade, and then shortly after that, the 11th grade, this second half of the school year.
And what a great collaboration. Between the tribe and Palm Springs Unified and our foundation, and the tribe's funding this program, correct?
Yes. They've, if we were doing it in-house, we would probably print it in our print shop and it would look pretty good, but they've got the resources to develop beautiful, glossy, full-color pictures that are part of the activities that we do in the curriculum, and workbooks that they're replenishing every year that are full of pictures that come from their archives that they have access to. And so they really are the kind of high quality materials that you get directly from a publisher. And so that's been a great part of the collaboration.
And the Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians have been fabulous partners
for
years and years on so many different programs and projects. And this one's probably the biggest and are we not on the ground floor of this?
What I tell people about the third grade is it says in the standards for the state that you're supposed to teach a major standard is teaching about the local American Indian nations as the standards state. But most just use a generic program or local materials that haven't been even looked at by the local tribe. And so we are, I think, probably one of the first districts to actively work with the tribe to make sure that our materials are accurate and really reflecting what's important to them, so that our students, when they're learning about the culture, are learning about it in a way that is really reflective of those deeply held traditions and the history.
And part of that is a field trip that every one of our third graders gets to go on to see the Indian Canyons and the beautiful Native American land that is right here.
That's right.
It's gorgeous. Yeah. And they pay for that too.
Yeah. The Agua Caliente Band of Cahuilla Indians, commonly known as the tribe in this area, are paying for every single one of our 1,600 third grade students to go on a bus in March and to see the canyon for themselves. And two of the lessons that we wrote are both in preparation for the field trip and then following up the field trip.
And they also do certain community days throughout the year where they have special days at the Indian Canyons, and they almost always it's free for students. They charge the parents to come with them, but they have a small fee, like $10.
Right, they
have
a junior ranger day, I think it is.
Yeah.
Right,
and
so this is bringing that
great
to everybody, because not everyone knows about it or takes the time to go up there on that given day or days, but this is guaranteeing that every student will get that information. And then as we develop the eighth grade curriculum, we're talking to the tribe about working in a field trip to the new cultural center that's going up in downtown. And yeah, by the time we roll that out in the spring, it won't be quite open and ready to be visited, but we hope in the coming years that would be a key part of the eighth grade experience.
That's fabulous. So I was going to ask you what you feel are some of the greatest rewards in the job that you're doing. I think it sounds like this one might be the biggest one.
No,
what
it
else?
Is because it's gonna last a long time. And then the other is, I mean, and these are two things that a lot of people talk about, this the sex ed and the agua caliente, because they're things that a lot of parents out there have heard about and know about. But a lot of what I do in my job is pretty mundane, but it's extremely important, and that is really ensuring that we use our budgets strategically to make sure that students have the best curriculum materials and that teachers are trained in the best practices available so that our students can learn. So that's a lot of what I spend my time on. That's the most rewarding and basic, but it's often overlooked. People don't know there is somebody at the district office, a whole team of people that are thinking about these things and how to make sure that teachers are well prepared.
What do you find are some of your biggest challenges in your job?
So there's a lot of challenges around working with early childhood education, ECE. As you may know, we're constantly trying to expand it, and that's something it's challenging because there's way more need than there are spaces and facilities and teachers that are licensed. So working with that program has been a real challenge for me, but what it's also been rewarding because we just expanded pre-K programs in the last year to the Desert Highlands area, Sunrise Park. There's like a rec center in there that now has a licensed program that wasn't licensed previously, and up in Desert Hot Springs, we just opened a school. But they're very challenging, very hard to open, but luckily we have a director, Myra Costa, who's really skilled at seeing these things through.
How many kids do we have in early childhood? There's a bunch of different programs.
I think we're probably pushing close to 1,000 across the whole district. I know that when we prepared a presentation for the board last year, we found that we had more students in ECE than any other district in the county.
Wow.
So we really have a well-developed program, and we keep expanding and keep looking for new places to expand.
I know our Board of Education, and they're certainly far from being the only ones, would love to see universal preschool.
Right.
I think there's probably nobody around that wouldn't say that's an awesome idea. It's also really expensive.
Yeah,
and
to do
it
right.
You can't do it, I mean, unless the state comes up with some additional funding to make that happen. So,
and there has been some new funding coming down, so that's really helped us to expand. But a lot of the expansion and the new rules are about going to full day pre-K. So when you go from having some students coming for 3 hours in the morning and others coming in 3 hours in the afternoon, that means now there's fewer spots. So
sure.
It's higher quality and a richer preparation for kindergarten, but it's still limiting
catch 22,
the numbers.
Yeah. And but you certainly, I don't think anybody can argue the benefits of early childhood education.
It's absolutely.
You see the difference when a child comes to kindergarten after they've been to preschool versus when they haven't.
Yes.
They're already used to being in the learning environment. They're already, you know, they know how to write their name. They know how to, you know, sit quietly. It's
extremely important.
And that's we could spend a whole other show talking about that, Mike, so maybe we will eventually.
Yes, definitely.
In the meantime, I certainly appreciate you being here, and we appreciate everything that you do, and I'm glad to have you on the team.
Thank you, Joan.
Thanks, we'll have you back.
Take care.
And next week, our guest will be our Kiwanis Club of Palm Springs Key Club Advisor, David McGuffin, and two of the representatives of the Cathedral City and Rancho Mirage Key Clubs, Rancho Mirage and Cathedral City High School Key Club. Our show airs each Sunday right here on KGX and KWXY. Our podcast is uploaded each week. Please subscribe by going to iTunes. Look for You Learn Something New. press subscribe. Please tell all your friends to do the same. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Marlene, and we'll see you next week.